My dad was sort of a fiddler. If you could hear him, you would think that that's awful, but he was a fiddler.
So who inspired you to go into music?
Other than my parents, a music teacher at the high school, her name was Evelyn Wells, and she pushed me and pushed me and pushed me. I joined as a sixth grader, I joined the orchestra at the high school, walked back and forth, and then was in the orchestra all the way through the school, my school. And on my senior year, the band director got drafted or enlisted, I don't recall which, and Evelyn picked up the whole program. And as a result, she got me teaching the string kids. So I got my fingers into that teaching mold quite early.
And this is the 1940s. When you say drafted into World War II.
Right. I was graduated in 1944 from Owego Free Academy.
You played the viola?
I play the viola now, but I started on violin.
You must have been playing at an incredibly high level for her to give you students when you were just a teenager.
Yeah, could be. I auditioned for NISMA and was in Allstate and so on and so forth, way back when.
What did your parents do to encourage you in music?
I don't think anything, really. They just saw to it that I got to the lessons and pushed me to practice, which none of us really like to do anyway.
And then you went to Ithaca College?
I went to Ithaca College for 4 years.
What was it like back in the 1950s? Was it even on its current campus?
No, it wasn't. It was down in the city. And the first 2 years, the number of kids on campus was very slim. And then war ended, and we were inundated with men and boys. And let me tell you, we girls were pretty happy about that, because up until then, the college had been pretty much all girls.
I think the same thing happened in Rochester at the Eastman School of Music, and we have a tape of a speech that Howard Hanson gave at Eastman during the war and talking about how important musicians would be once all the machines of war were put to rest, which he thought would happen.
Yeah.
You know, that people would feel the need for the arts more than ever after the war ended.
That's right, really. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think the college was really pushed to its limits at that point to accommodate everybody that was there.
So what did you want to do? Were you set out to be a teacher from the beginning?
I did. Mm-hmm. I wanted to emulate Evelyn Wells, of course.
What was she like?
She was just she was a pianist, which, of course, was different from my string background. Oh, and by the way, she got me started on piano, too, ahead of time as a senior in high school. So that got me really a good head start at Ithaca. And I don't know, I liked being with people. I did a lot of babysitting as a kid, and I thought I wanted to be a teacher.
And you did. You taught. You went. You got your master's degree. You went on to the University of Rochester, and became an administrator. What are some memories you have of teaching in the early days where you learned a lesson about yourself or about teaching?
I think one of the things was to make friends with everybody in the school, because as a special ed teacher, you're at their mercy.
And by special ed, you mean music?
Music, right. Right. And because if they don't want to let the kids out for a special rehearsal or something like that, forget it. You're dead in the world. So I think that's the most important lesson we have to give to kids going into the field is make yourself available. Help empty waste baskets, do whatever you can to get things rolling for yourself.
Were your first days in teaching joyful, difficult, challenging?
The school district at that time, Corning Northside, was separate from the Corning, which is now the Consolidated District, had a lot of older people, and so they mothered me in many ways, and that was good. And I had a building principal who was terrific. He had a big ego, but that's okay. He would tap dance as he stood at the ditto machine, turning the handle on that old ditto machine. He would tap dance. And he was fun to be with, you know?
Some of our listeners probably don't even remember what a ditto machine is, but I do. I remember those papers smelling like bananas.
That's right.
Were you able to set your own agenda as a music teacher and decide, you know, what repertoire, what you wanted to work on?
Yes, there was no curriculum, so I could just do what I wanted to do. And then eventually, when the school consolidated, I began to move into other areas and did some string teaching at that same time. So, and that kept me in one building, which was better than traveling all around the district.
Now, you were working with elementary school. What did what did you like about working with kids that age?
They're so open and so receptive to anything almost, you know. And they, if you treat them well, they will treat you well as too.
Now, eventually you came to Webster and became an administrator there. What were those days like?
Webster at that point was a growing district. In fact, the building that I opened, Whit Road School, wasn't completed when we opened it. There was kindergarten in the building and I think another couple of grades. But other than that, we had to go to, and there was no heat in the building. No heat. And it was a cold October, not like this one. And we would go into our class, and the minute we had a break, we would go into this little room where there was a coffee machine, put our hands around the coffee machine to get warm. And then we also traveled to school basements, church basements, almost anything to find space for our kids. And we finally moved in there probably around November.
What year would this be, the late 50s,
early
60s? Early
60s. Mid-60s, I guess, is better.
Wow. Now, I mean, year after year, you were putting on holiday concerts, spring concerts. Are there any stories that you look back at that still make you laugh, things that happened, you know, related to performances with your kids?
Well, I guess one of them was I was doing a string at this point in time at Duet, and it was a very cold day. Probably a December concert. And I tried to get the kids to leave their instruments in school so that they would be warm when we got ready to play. And one of the kids didn't. And wouldn't you know, a string broke in the process of tuning. And here you are scrambling to get everything done, and you've got to find a string for this kid to, so that that one can play. It happens, but, you know, it's it makes life interesting.
Now, you must have had students that went on into music.
I did, yes. I've had several, as a matter of fact. And that's the good part, isn't it, really, when you do that.
Absolutely. Now, one thing that struck me, Jean, looking at your biography, is that you retired in the 1960s.
I did.
And, you know, many teachers, when they retire, you know, they hand over the keys and just walk out and pick up the golf clubs and do the things they always want to do. But you have been such a passionate advocate for music education. What fueled your passion, and why did you want to get so involved in so many different operations, such as the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra youth programs?
In that particular case, I was not happy with the way things were going. That was my feeling, that we could have done a better job.
What specifically were you not happy with?
I didn't like the way the organization was operating. And at that time, and I don't want to, I mean, this was a group of ladies that were running it, and they had run out of energy, I think, and everything else. And we talked about how we were going to started up again, and I went away for winter vacation in Arizona. And when I came back, the league was gone, the orchestra was gone, everything was gone.
So, and give us a timetable here. This would have been like around 1970-ish?
I would say around 1962, 63, something like that. And it was, but don't hold me to that. But anyway, when we came back, we decided we're going to start that up again, and the education program up again, and it is still flourishing.
So what did you do to help shape that? What were your goals?
One of them was to find a good conductor, and that good conductor was David Harmon, and he was there until just a couple of years ago. And now we found another good young guy who is doing some of the same things that David did to keep the orchestra alive. And it's working. So, had a board meeting last night, as a matter of fact. So there you go.
How has it changed over the years, do you think, in terms of the students, what they're able to do, what their lives are like?
We've had some wonderful teachers, and those teachers have really pushed the string players. So we've had some excellent string players. Right now, we've got wonderful cellists. They are just soaring. And we've got some good string teachers going, too. And I think we're in a turnover stage with some of the good string teachers. They're kind of pulling back. And we need to find some more to fill those shoes. So, but anyway, new conductor, I think that always breathes new life into an organization. And we've got a new chair, and that brings new life. But there are a couple of us who sit there, Joe Wong and I, who have been there for a long time.
So you've been involved in curriculum development and Avon Central School District at the state level through the New York State School Music Association. Yeah. What are your goals as a musician and a music educator? What do you want to see happen in schools to flourish?
I'd like to see a K-12 program that was well accepted in the community and by the school district, and they were not so involved in the money side of it that they cut back on the arts every time there was a need to cut money. Arts are important for most people, and I would say all people, really. And so that we really need to ensure that that happens. There's a new curriculum that's being written right now for K-12, and one of our people here in Rochester area, Fred Weingarten, is in that chair for State Education Department, and so we're going to be doing a lot of work now in the next couple of years to get that whole program implemented.
Now, when you were teaching starting out, there was no curriculum. No. Do you think that there needs to be a statewide curriculum?
Yes, I do think there needs to be. What we did really, what I did was I took what my theory teacher had worked with me on and when I was doing my student teacher, and I tried to implement that, and it works. And it still could work today.
Now, over the course of your career and your advocacy for the arts, would you say that artists and musicians and teachers have sort of been on the defense of that whole time in terms of talking about the importance of the arts? Or does that kind of ebb and flow in terms of the way that culture feels about the arts and arts education?
I think it ebbs and flows. Mm-hmm. Back in the, I think it was the 80s, there was a good flow again that was coming up, and we got some good curriculum written then, and now again it's coming back again. So I think it's all predicated upon money.
Now, as a teacher and an educator, how can you tell when you're doing a great job? When do you feel like things are working?
I think the kids go home and talk to their parents about it, and they say, the other thing that I used to do, too, and I'm not sure anybody does it anymore, but during that parent-teacher time, I used to invite the parents into my room, and they would see what I was doing. And that was terrific, because they would go home and we never did that when we were in school. And also the concerts, I think that also helps, but it shows a level of performance that perhaps they haven't experienced before in their school days.
What gives you most joy as a music educator?
Having one of my pupils succeed, really. And also some of the people that I have shepherded, shall we say, through the many years I've been involved with music education.
Well, tell us about your own life as a performer. You're still playing?
I'm still playing with the Penfield Symphony. We got a concert coming up this Monday night.
Well, you have been involved in Rochester's cultural life and the whole region's, the whole state cultural life for a long, long time. Give us the bird's eye view, Jean. Like, how has it changed over time in positive ways?
I think music was kind of like an extra, always, you know, it was extracurricular. That was the word that was associated with us. But I think that is beginning to change now. I think people, probably because jobs are, the employment situation is such that people need something to do to relax, to get out of their whatever they're doing and have something else to do. And so they can join an orchestra, they can join a chorus, they can join a band or whatever. And we have so many here in town that are good quality performing groups. So if anybody's interested, I'm sure they'd find a place for them.
And you think there are more performing groups than there used to be?
Yes, there are. For instance, the band situation, Eastman kind of got one started 2 summers ago, and it really has taken off, and it's a wonderful group.
Well, there's a whole New Horizons program, which is now an international phenomenon that started here in Rochester, too.
Right. Yeah. And all of those things help. And when you've got senior citizens who are back doing level one solos and enjoying it, why not?
What do you love about the feeling of playing in an orchestra?
The camaraderie, the working together, the sense of you're part of, you're a little segment of the big picture.
Do you lose track of time during rehearsals?
In the beginning, yes, but towards 10 o'clock, it gets a little bit, I wish this clock would move faster.
I think anyone that's in an ensemble feels that way at night, for sure. What are some ways, would you say, that the musical life of Western and Central New York, in your view, has changed, that has troubled you in any way?
Well, one of them is the lack of funding for schools. And therefore, one of the first things that gets cut are those extra things that are really so important to the lives of kids and of as adults, too. That's one. And the other thing, too, is I think we need to do a better job with getting everybody involved in some branch of the arts. I don't care which one it is, but something that would encourage them to have some kind of a life outside of the bread and butter kind of activities that they have to do. Whether it be playing baseball or softball or whatever. And also band, orchestra, chorus, of course. Yeah.
Well, who are some of the people that have inspired you along the way to push yourself as a musician, as a teacher?
Well, the first one, of course, was Evelyn Wells, way back when. And she left right after I did, and we never really kept up with each other, and I regret that. Then I think probably the next person was really two people. One was Lynn Bogart, who was my teacher, and also a relative, I found out later, and also a fellow by the name of Rowski, and who was a teacher at Ithaca. And then up at Cornell, I had a professor by the name of Gates and Biggerstaff, and both of them really pushed me because I was in a different field at that point. And when I got here, Terry Taylor. Terry is the person, he was president of NISMA, taught in Spencerport, building his name for him there, and he kept pushing me. I was saying to him, after I get through with this third VP job, I'm done. He says, no, you're not going to do that. You're going to run for president. And I did. But Terry definitely was one of the instigators to needle me.
He was a force of nature for sure.
Yes, he was.
Well, looking at your biography and all the amazing things you've done, the committees you've served on, board member of the Rochester Philharmonic Youth Orchestra, which you're still doing, president of the Monroe County School Music Association, or the chair, rather, your involvement in NISMA at the state level. I must say, Jean, I feel like a slacker. I thought I was a busy person.
As a retiree, you have a little extra time, and why not give it to those things that you really enjoy and value?
Why do you think music is so valuable to us as human beings?
Because it can calm you or it can excite you, whichever way you want to look at it. But it also can be with you, with the radio that we have today and your station, as well as all of the CDs and tapes, etc. People can live with it. and they can choose what kind of music they like. I like a good round dance. I like a good square dance once in a while, you know. I did play square dances, you know.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did.
Very nice. What about times when music has moved you? I know, I don't know about your experience, but sometimes if I'm making a lot of music, I'm kind of detached from it. I'm rarely moved by it unless I'm in a certain special circumstance. Well, take us to a moment when you were emotionally moved by a piece of music in a powerful way.
You may not like this, but I think it was when my mother died. And we had family around and everything. And it was the music that we had at church was just very moving to me. And it brought back my youth when I was going to church and singing from the pews and so forth.
Well, you know, music pops up in funerals and weddings and our most important occasions.
That's right.
Certainly, yeah.
It's core, really, isn't it, to those special celebrations we have.
Well, let me ask a different question. What are some of your favorite pieces to play?
My favorite music to play, Wieniawski Violin Concerto. It has great violin parts and all over the fiddle, and it has good rhythm and just a lovely piece. And it's one that I used in solo competition a couple of times too, so that has special meaning.
How did you switch from violin to viola?
When we first went to Ithaca, it was a very small school. And the orchestra was led by a fellow who was his violin teacher, and he was trying to enlarge the orchestra. There were no violas in the orchestra. And so one day he said, I wonder if anybody would be willing to try viola and transfer over. And if you knew me, you'd know that my hand would be up almost immediately on that. And so I said, sure, I'll try it. And it has a different clef, so you have to learn to read a new clef all over again. And I really struggled with that because I didn't have anybody to really help me with it. But anyway, the switch to viola was good because I like the timbre of the instrument. It's a little bit heavier, and it's getting a little too heavy these days. But I just like the sound of it. It's mellow. It's kind of in between the violin and the cello in the range. And so it's good. And it's gotten me a lot of good activities.
So if you could go back to your very first days of teaching and give yourself a bit of advice at this point in your life, what would you have told yourself?
Work hard.
It sounds like you did.
I really tried. I really have tried all my life to be, because that's what I got from my mother and father. They were both hard workers. This was a depression, and it was hard to make ends meet. There wasn't always milk on the table.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to share your story and your life with us.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here.